the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm a long-standing journalist of the environment, food, and health. We talk about science, policy, activism, the media, popular attitudes, and a whole lot more on this show. Each week on Connect the Dots, we connect the dots between your personal well-being and what's going on in our whole health environment. We talk about earth, water, food, air, the health of our communities, the health of our society, the ecological balance of planet Earth. Each week on the show, we bring in different experts, thought leaders, journalists, authors, scientists, to discuss all of the different facets of our interconnected world that impact us, our well-being, and the well-being of all species on Earth. Today's show is a really exciting one because I have not one but three guests for you. We'll be introducing them in short order, and the theme today is how corruption at different levels of government is actually acting to disseminate all of the fossil fuels that we need to curb and thereby accelerating climate change. So we're going to look right into the heart of the beast today on Connect the Dots. Stay with us. You know, it's just about 10 years ago that I first heard of something called fracking, which was a way to get fossil fuels out of the earth of New York State, Pennsylvania, and it caused all kinds of pollution and other problems, contamination, environmental destruction, destruction of water, and no one knew anything about it. I was in the media at that time, had a platform on the Huffington Post. I thought, wow, I'm going to have to do something about this. And then I heard that there was a guy going around with a film camera trying to figure out what this was, show what this was, and awaken action against it. And I thought, well, I'm just going to follow what he does, promote what he does, and we're going to stop this thing. And I am so honored and pleased to welcome to today's Connect the Dots, Josh Fox. It's been a 10-year journey. He is the director of Gasland 1, Gasland 2, How to Let Go of the World and Love, Awake, A Dream from Standing Rock, and many other films we've featured on the show. I regard him as a hero and leader of the movement to save the Earth. So honored to have you with us today on Connect the Dots. Josh Fox, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That's really a great opening. Appreciate it. And, you know, of course, the fight against fracking continues. All across the world. And, you know, this is something that I found out about in my neck of the woods, which isn't so far from you, in the upper Delaware River Basin, right there at the border of New York State and Pennsylvania. But it's been something that has been a huge battle, an environmental battle, and a battle for the climate and the battle for the planet all across the earth, from, you know, America to Europe to Asia to Africa. And I've been on six continents filming and pursuing the story of how we change from fossil fuels to renewable energy. And there's a crucial battle going on in New York State right now, and I think that's what we want to talk about.
Very definitely. We did get the ban on actually fracking wells in the state in 2014, mm-hmm. but here we are again. What's the next front line?
Well, unfortunately, although we've had an incredibly strong citizen movement on fracking across the world, and certainly in New York State, that's a grassroots movement with leadership all across the state, you know, that organized and battled and got science to win the day in New York State against the fracking industry. And luckily, you know, Governor Andrew Cuomo and his administration saw our side of that and realized that they needed to ban fracking. But the big problem right now is that at the federal level, you know, the Obama administration hooked us into a multi-decade fracking, pro-fracking policy. And what that means is that this is something that the establishment Democrats did, right? The Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, as well as the Republicans. They said, we need to frack across this country because natural gas, fracked gas, I like to call it, is our next energy future in America. And they pushed all of our energy infrastructure towards fracked gas and fracking. This was extraordinarily ignorant because they originally thought that natural gas was better than coal for the climate. Coal is, of course, a horrible and awful fuel that should be eradicated, and we were in the midst of doing that until Donald Trump. But the Obama administration really pushed fracking as the alternative, not realizing that fracked gas is actually worse for the climate than coal, because when you burn coal, you get carbon dioxide. That heats up the earth. When you frack for gas, you burn and get carbon dioxide. Yes, you get less. But you also get huge amounts of methane, the gas itself, into the atmosphere, and methane is 100 times more potent than CO2 is. So, you know, you get actually a worse greenhouse gas emissions profile. Nevertheless, they set into motion, whether this was good intentions or bad intentions or somewhere in between, I happen to think it was the corrupting nature of the fossil fuel industry. Excuse me, I'm sorry. The truck going by. The corrupting nature of the fossil fuel industry on our government, and that administration being really susceptible to that. So what they did was they pushed forward fracking infrastructure all across the country. What is infrastructure? Power plants. Power plants to build new, need pipelines. Pipelines need compressor stations. When you frack, you also probably are going to want to export that gas. So we build liquefied natural gas terminals to put natural gas on ships and send it across the oceans to Europe and Asia. This is a whole hog, you know, American fracking effort where you have fracking in every possible form, you know, from natural gas to oil, shale oil to tight sands to all the different ways that they can frack things. And basically, they pushed out a proposal at a state level, 300 new fracked gas power plants. 300 fracked gas power plants will require upwards of 2 million new fracking wells, hundreds of thousands of miles of pipelines. I mean, this is a horrific American energy future. Horrific, absolutely horrific. One of those power plants happens to be in Orange County, New York. It's way yonder, I think is the name of the town. And it's just, you know, about an hour away from New York City, about an hour away from the Delaware River Basin, sort of in the middle there. And it's 1,500 megawatt, I think, something like that. And this would burn, I don't know, enormous amounts of natural gas to create power that we don't need, that no one has actually signed up to purchase. This is one of those production for use type of things. Like, let's build the power plant so we can frack Pennsylvania more. And the citizens, of course, all around this power plant are mobilizing, and they're very much against that. Notably, an amazing organizer named Pramila Malik and James Cromwell. James Cromwell, people know as an actor in the movie Babe. He's the farmer. He's an extraordinary actor and activist that I've gotten to know over the last couple of years fighting this power plant. The power plant is called the CPV power plant. Competitive Power Ventures power plant. Competitive being the key word there. What are we competing with? Well, this power plant is competing with democracy, it's competing with public health, it's competing with sanity, it's competing with renewable energy, it's competing with our children's future, and it's competing with the planet. Competition in this case, not a good thing. So people have bound together to fight this power plant, and they're doing so in a number of different demonstrations constantly around the clock. The next one is on Wednesday, Valentine's Day, and it focuses on a trial that is a corruption trial. Not surprisingly, fossil fuels and corruption go hand in hand. A corruption trial that shows that some of the cronyism and bribery towards the Cuomo administration that got this power plant passed. So unfortunately, although Cuomo is our banned fracking governor, he also is allowing these power plants to go forward, which is a huge problem. And it's one of those things that shows his true colors. If he bans fracking in New York State and then doesn't ban the power plants, that's, I think we have to make sure that he knows that we know that. So this protest, it's like a Valentine's Day protest, kind of awesome, like break up with corruption, please, Cuomo, and fall back in love with New Yorkers. That's sort of the idea. And it's on Valentine's Day. I think it's 12:30. It's out in front of the courthouse, Thurgood Marshall Courthouse, downtown Lower Manhattan. And you can find out more about that at the Protect Orange County Facebook page. Protect Orange County Facebook page has the details. I have on my Facebook page, I have a live video about it. So you can also go there. But listen, this is crucial. Like, when I saw this map of 300 proposed fracked gas power plants, to me, this was looking at the multi-headed Hydra. It was like looking at the death of the planet. It terrified me more than anything I could imagine. You know, right now I'm in New Orleans. Working on a project which I've been working on and off for a while. There's one of them. There's a power plant, a frack gas power plant that's being proposed for right outside of New Orleans. When I'm in Pennsylvania, I know that in the valley outside of Scranton, there are 6 of these power plants proposed. Several of them have already been built. These power plants, there are 6 of them along the Sable Trail pipeline in Florida. And again, this is not just a power plant battle. This is an infrastructure battle. LNG terminals to export frack gas all up and down the East Coast, Gulf Coast, and in the Pacific Northwest. Some of those have been stopped, but these only get stopped. These insidious, horrible projects only get stopped when citizens stand up, organize, and fight back. And that's what we're asking people to do.
Thank you. That's really important. So that's going to be 12:30 this Wednesday, February 14th on Valentine's Day. Show mm-hmm. your support and urge Governor Cuomo to fall in love with New York all over again. You know, this is something that city by city, region by region, state by state, and throughout the country and the world, we're all going to have to fight on our local level as well as on the national level. And, of course, you have been the person going all around the world to show how all of this is connected in your various films. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for modeling that we can take a stand. You know, a lot of people just want to sort of sit around and kind of wait for someone else to solve our problems. Admittedly, we have a terrible administration that's a gas and oil administration, and that's a huge, huge problem. But there's something that each of us can do to, you know, snip off one head of the multi-headed Hydra, as you described it, wherever you are. And New Yorkers, we're up again. It's our turn to do it. Thank you so much for being with us today, Josh. Yeah.
You're welcome. New York has always led on this, and that's what's very important, I think. You know, look, Two small things I want to mention just in terms of why to participate. The first one is, look, if you don't participate in making these crucial decisions for yourself or your children, then the oil industry is going to make them for you. And you don't want that. You know what I mean? If your child was sick and had the flu, you wouldn't say, oh, I'll wait for somebody else to take them to the doctor. You know what I mean? If mm-hmm. if you had a serious problem, you wouldn't sit around and be like, you know what, someone else is going to take care of this for me. This is that type of problem. This is that type of thing. That responsibility falls on all of us, I think, to do this. And it's unfortunate in a way because, you know, everybody really is, people don't have money, and everyone is, we have our backs against the wall all across this country right now, especially with the rates of poverty and the rates of you know, working poor and the things that America is a hard country to live in right now. People don't realize that as much as it's really true. But at the same time, I would like to say that taking this responsibility on and doing this is not actually a burden. It's actually a joyful and fun and amazing and great process because when you're sitting at home not doing something, that's the moment the depression sinks in. That's the moment the anxiety sinks in. When you go out in the streets and you're with your fellow citizens and you have a creative sign that you've made and you're screaming and you're chanting with other people, it's like those great communal experiences that we always value, like going to a concert or going to church or going to a dance or whatever it is that you want to do. It's when we're around other people that we really understand what life on the planet is all about. So this is one of those opportunities. And if it's Valentine's Day, bring a date. You know, it's like, that's the way it goes. Like, make this a protest date. People do all sorts of weird dates these days. They go on rock climbing dates and they, you know, they do all these things. Go on like a protest date, and that's the way you'll know if this person really has your back or not. If you want to continue to date them, is whether they're going to go to a protest with you. Because honestly, like, that's the fight that we have in front of us right now. So have a happy Valentine's Day. Don't see this as a pain, a painful obligation. See, this is a joyful obligation and something that we have fun doing together. That's my 2 cents. So, you know, get out there, fight the frack gas monster. It's up to us. We can have 100% renewable energy in this world. We know that the solar and wind and the other renewable energies, but predominantly solar and wind, really can bring us to 100% all of our energy needs on the planet. We know that that's the future that we want, not a fracked gas future. So let's make it happen. So thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And thank you for all your good work and reporting on this.
Oh, well, thank you. And, you know, it's been 10 years, and we'll keep doing it for as long as we need to make this happen with more and more people joining in. Our next guest on the show, Josh Fox, just gave a beautiful introduction, and we'll be hearing now from Pramila Malik, who has been the lead organizer on this action that we're talking about. The founder of Protect Orange County and a whole host of allied groups, Pramila has been leading the fight against the CPV power plant for many years. She's also was a 2016 candidate for state senate in New York and is a chair of Principled Progressives, one of the chapters of New York PAN. Welcome to Connect the Dots, Pramila Malik. So great to have you here with us today.
Thank you so much, and I apologize about my dog barking in the background.
Oh, well, the animals are here to help us out because they, you know, they want us to protect the planet on their behalf, too. I have my cat sitting here.
yeah, luckily cats don't bark loud or don't make loud noises generally.
So Josh has kind of filled us in about the larger climate effects of these power plants, as well as this one that, you know, is going into operation, unfortunately, in New York State. One of the focal points of the rally that's taking place on February 14th at 12:30 downtown in New York, and we hope all listeners will come and bring folks with you. One of the focal points is really persuading Governor Cuomo to act on behalf of New Yorkers and not this kind of crony influence that all too often leaves us in a troubled health, environmental, economic, and political state. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about the background there, Pramila?
Right. So in downtown right now at the Thurgood Marshall Courthouse, there is a trial underway of a person named Joseph Percoco, who is Governor Cuomo's former closest aide and close friend, so close he's often been described by Cuomo as his second brother. And it's a one of the biggest corruption scandals in New York's history. And it is on display right now in those proceedings, in the criminal proceedings. There are several other people charged, including a former executive from the power plant company, the Competitive Power Ventures, and that person's name is Braith Kelly. And they're both on trial along with a real estate development company and their executives. And it involves a pay-to-play bribery corruption scheme in which this aide, Joseph Percoco, was receiving money. I'm sorry about that. Receiving money from the company itself. And the payments were going to his wife for a low-show job. She was a school teacher. The family moved from Staten Island to Westchester. She was a school teacher in Staten Island, lost her job as a teacher. And Percoco and Kelly came up with this scheme in which she was technically some type of consultant for a CPV Educates program in which she was supposed to work about 4 hours a month and get paid $7,500 a month for that job. And apparently $7,500 was what she was earning before as a teacher. And Percoco said to Kelly, you know, this is how much money we need to run our household. And in exchange for that, Percoco, who had a lot of high-level influence in Albany, promised to facilitate and help the power plant company through the complex regulatory state approval process. This was, again, a pay-to-play corruption scheme. Money was exchanged, you know, was exchanged between these parties. The money was referred to in emails amongst all these people as ZD, derived from the television show The Sopranos. So that was, that's basically, you know, what transpired. And this is why all of the issues that we kept raising in objection to the power plant were systematically and repeatedly ignored by the governor's office and his state agencies.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Yeah.
So here you have a whole town and a whole region of people who are going to be subject to the contamination coming from this plant. The plant itself is generating, is going to generate the need for much more fracking, pipelines, LNG export, and all the things that Josh Fox described. It's going to have a terrible global environmental effect to proceed with this kind of plan. And he, and actually, I believe that it's the case that one of the very first national pipeline stories that were ever published way before Standing Rock, or people were aware of the problem with pipelines and infrastructure, was a story that I did on Alternet on your fight going back a number of years. And I think it's probably Reuters picked it up, and it's probably the first national story on pipelines. And so here you are X number of years later with this plant constructed, and now finding out that the governor was turning a Governor Cuomo of New York State was turning a deaf ear because somebody close to him and, you know, whom he trusted was actually being paid off by the company that wants to build this, and therefore the entire town and region is subject to this contamination and being systemically ignored. That is a truly shocking, shocking thing. And
right.
So the rally that's taking place on February 14th at 12:30 is actually in front of the courthouse where this trial is ongoing?
Yes, it is, because our message to Albany is, and to the media, which, by the way, is really not covering the depth of the story and the real implications of this story. For example, nobody in the media has come to even look at this power plant and to even investigate what were the approvals that this company got over the course of these illegal payments. But, you know, the corruption is much deeper than just this direct bribery. There were LLCs created in order to funnel donation money to the governor's campaign. There was, yes, it was, it's really bad. I mean, it really calls to question, you know, the integrity of our democracy. And the fact that this power plant is still operational, despite all of the revelations in this trial and the indictment and the criminal complaint and the documentary evidence, that just the plain, all the emails that the government has, the fact that this plant is still operational tells you how entrenched these companies are, how much control they have over our government. This plant should have been shut down as soon as those indictments were announced, But yet here we are over a year later, and not only is it still operational, it just fired up as this trial began for the first time. People have started getting sick already. And the state just renewed several critical state permits, actually much earlier than they should have been renewed. They weren't up for renewal until summertime. But the state, I think, trying to get ahead of a verdict on this corruption trial. Yes, they just renewed those state permits. So so our message is to governor and to all the elected officials and politicians, it's time to break up with fossil fuel lobbyists. Valentine's Day is an appropriate day to have this message. We're going to give them 50 ways to leave their lobbyist. but what we really want to say is, you know, this is what Bernie talked about in his campaign, that we either have government that serves the interest of the people or big moneyed interest. You can't serve both. They're in conflict with one another. And what happened with CPV shows why we have a climate crisis. It has less to do with methane and CO2 and more to do with corruption. I always use the analogy excuse me, that methane and CO2 are kind of like the bullets, but the gun is corruption. And that's why we have a climate crisis. So when you talk about impacts, yes, there are local public health impacts, tremendous local public health impacts, but the impact is global. And, you know, places like New York City, of course, are very vulnerable to climate change. You know, people are dying in Puerto Rico, dying in California. So there's a real life and death consequence to what transpired behind the scenes, behind closed doors in Albany. And there were fancy fishing trips, you know, deep sea fishing trips.
You know what we're going to do, Pramila? You know, I regard our conversation today to let people know to go to the rally as a kind of an appetizer. We're going to do a longer show, bring in you and James Cromwell, the distinguished actor and director, and really get into this in depth, because we're really dealing here with something that's happening at the crux of our democracy, our children's future, and all the rest of it. So, you know, thank you so much for being with us today on the program. And everyone, you know, please, it's happening. Once the show ends, as we're about to do, you have time to, if you're in the New York metro area, hop on the subway, you know, take a bus, get there downtown at Foley Square and participate in the Valentine's Day rally that we're discussing today with its organizer, Pramila Malik. Thank you so much for being with me today.
And I just want to let people know they could get more information at Protect Orange County's Facebook page and our website, protectorangecounty.org. And James Cromwell will be at the rally and at the trial, along with a number of other prominent guests and speakers. And so it should be a really fun and effective event. And we really need to send a powerful message to Albany that it's time to break up with these lobbyists.
Oh, so we're coming back from our conversation with Pramila Malik with some real questions about what's going on in our country. As both Josh Fox and Pramila detailed, there's corruption at the heart of this terrible CPV plant in upstate New York. But the problems of corruption are not local, and they're not in one group's backyard, and they're not isolated, as our next guest will discuss with us. I'm delighted to have back Steve Horn. He's been a prior guest on the show several times. I think maybe this is your third appearance. Steve is a San Diego-based research fellow for DSmog blog, which is an absolutely fantastic online publication that everyone should read and follow, to read his articles, his past articles. You know, their subtitle is Clearing the PR Pollution That Clouds Climate Science. So this is like a premier environmental and energy information spot. Steve is also an investigative journalist. He has priorly worked as a reporter and researcher at the Center for Media and Democracy, and he's also a competitive runner and marathoner. His writing has appeared in Al Jazeera America, The Guardian, The Intercept, Vice News, TYT Investigates, and a whole host of other publications. And actually, he's going to be moving on to a new position soon, but we'll be following him there. So, you know, Steve, welcome back to Connect the Dots. It's really great to have you here.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
You know, I think some of our listeners may be just kind of scratching their heads going, really? You know, here we have a Democratic governor in New York, and there's this corruption which is contributing to really, you know, accelerating climate change. And, you know, we have what was supposed to be a bridge to the future. In other words, we, you know, transitionally use natural gas is really becoming what we suspected all along, a huge build-out of gas infrastructures across the nation that affect climate. And, you know, this is going on abetted by our elected officials. Here we see it happening in New York State. What is your view from the national level? I mean, like, let's get a brief highlight of what the current administration is doing and then inquire, you know, are they novel in promoting this?
Yeah, no, it's interesting how the issue has been discussed under the new administration, and in a way, I think it highlights what you just said is that sort of what's been brewing all along, and that is that the natural gas industry and then the oil industry did not plan this as something that's, you know, something that's going to last for a few years or just some short bridge fuel. This administration really has, I think, been slightly more truthful in what they think that the oil and gas industry wants, and that is what they're calling, quote-unquote, energy dominance, whereas before, maybe under the Obama administration, he was a little bit more careful in the way he talked about it, even though we all sort of knew what was taking place. And if you actually were following it more from what his different agencies were doing, you get a much more clear picture of how his administration was handling different issues around fracking and offshore drilling and all the other oil and gas development that's happening in the United States. But yeah, I think that under the Trump administration, they're unabashedly pro-drilling and even pro-exports, which the Obama administration was actually very pro-exports, but never really talked about it and kind of shunned public discussion about it, very taboo. Those discussions were only taking place in very boring agency hearings. The Trump administration has made it really something that they openly boast about. For example, he brought up this topic during his State of the Union address. So we definitely see a shift in the way it's discussed, but I think that it's important to point out that this stuff has been developing not only since Obama was president, but really since the early 2000s under the Bush administration. So this has been a long time in the making, and I think that if you look at fracking and now with exports of that commodity, really only exponentially growing, more fields being developed, et cetera. So again, coming full circle, there's nothing bridge fuel about this. This is very long-term infrastructure with multi-billion dollar, even in the trillion-dollar range investments in these sorts of things. We total all these different investments up. So this is obviously a really big deal. And everyone who followed at the beginning knew that this wasn't just like some small kind of small business type of bridge fuel sort of thing. And this is big oil. They don't really get into these things unless they're very serious and in it for the long haul. So no surprise, but I think we do sort of see environmentalists who have been working on this issue for a long time and those who are concerned sort of vindicated by what's happening today. Unfortunately, the vindication has come at the cost of environmental degradation, water contamination, and climate change impacts. But nonetheless, those who have been working on this for a long time did definitely call it correctly.
So, you know, one of the things, and in fact, very much so in these recent weeks that, you know, we've recently passed the time of, you know, the first anniversary in the State of the Union address. So it's kind of just past the one-year mark of the beginning of the Trump administration, and there's a kind of nostalgia for former President Obama and the Obama administration. And yet, as your recent article on DSmog blog details, there's been a revolving door, and the people, you know, who maybe kept a lower profile about what their position was on this form of climate-destroying energy, you know, have now, as they've left the administration and their administrative roles, you know, walk through a revolving door, and where they've landed, I believe, makes it really clear where, you know, their allegiance always was and where they were always coming from. Can you fill in our listeners a bit about that?
Yeah, I think that this was sort of a striking development that I saw sort of start happening when Obama was in the back half of his White House term, so sort of the second half of his second term, where the first person to leave in a high-profile climate energy position was his top energy climate sort of aide on these issues was a woman by the name of Heather Zeichel, who, while he was still president, actually moved down from that position and was named to the board of directors of the very first company to get an export license in about 50 years, which was Cheniere from the Obama administration, to export liquefied natural gas, and most of that gas these days is obtained from fracking in different fields across the United States. So their terminal got a permit in 2012 in Sabine Pass, Louisiana. And by the way, that's the very same terminal now that's leaking. It's having a huge issue and was ordered shut down because of the leak.
So this is an Obama permitted export terminal back in 2012, and sort of connecting the dots. So that's now where Heather Zeichel is on the board of directors. But sort of that sort of to me was like, okay, so this is the first salvo, so to speak. Thereafter, once Obama was gone, I think what's even more striking is all the people who have gone either to work, who were in, you know, top, you know, highest level energy or environmental positions within mostly energy, so the Department of Energy, which is one of the agencies that oversees permitting for liquefied natural gas exports. Most of the high-ranking people, I don't know if I want to say most, but, you know, a significant number of high-ranking officials within the Department of Energy now have joined Heather Zeichel at Cheniere, but not necessarily on the board of directors. In some cases, you know, in the case of the former head of fossil fuel energy for the Department of Energy, which is actually a position within the DOE, his name is Christopher Smith. He's actually now an executive within Cheniere as of a few months ago. And you look at who his assistant is in that position, it's a guy by the name of Robert Fee, who was also one of his assistants to the Department of Energy. So you see very much a revolving door between high-ranking DOE officials who worked for Obama now working for Cheniere. And, of course, DOE was the very agency that was dealing with export issues under the Obama administration, of course, now in the Trump administration, too. But that's one of the two agencies that needs to give a green light for these export terminals, the other one being the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC. So, yeah, and on top of that, I'll just name a couple more names. Evan Burnham Snyder, who was the top spokesman for the Department of Energy, he's now the lead spokesman for Cheniere. So he worked for the Obama DOE. Before that, I mean, I think even more striking about him, he worked on one of the leading voices on climate change concerns within Congress, Edward Markey, who's now a Democratic senator from Massachusetts, and he's been one of the leading voices on that issue for a long, you know, on these type of issues for a long time. And one of the things that I found is back when Evan Burnham Snyder was working for Markey before he worked for Obama, he actually had it signed off his name as the contact person on a, it's pretty funny and in retrospect, kind of ironic, but the press release was titled "Debate Still Needed on Scale of LNG Exports." Well, now he's working for the company that's profiting the most right now from LNG exports, that is Cheniere. So those are some of the names. There are, of course, others, but I think that we see a trend that this stuff is happening within months of Trump, you know, taking over the White House and Obama leaving the White House. Lots of these officials flocked to Cheniere or another company named Tellurian, which is striking to me because these have been major beneficiaries of Trump's policy. And there, it raises questions about whether or not there was a long enough, quote unquote, cooling off period, at least in terms of government ethics laws, you know, how much did they wait enough time to go to these new jobs? And I think that the last thing I'll say to kind of summarize is, of course, one of the biggest criticisms of Trump is that his Office of Governmental Ethics has been non-existent. The guy who was heading up that office actually resigned in protest because they just didn't care about corruption, governmental corruption at all. Well, it turns out that maybe because of this non-enforcement, that these very Obama officials who went through the revolving door so quickly, they may be benefiting from that the lack of enforcement within that office. So lots of interesting trends happening. And of course, as you said up front, I think this does really show where the Obama administration stood on this issue all along. And I think that they're very much true in the camp that, oh, natural gas is a cleaner alternative for other countries around the world compared to coal and compared to, you know, like fuel oils or whatever else. So they really believe that they're sort of spreading clean and what they consider a cleaner energy around the world. Of course, the science speaks to that differently.
Yeah. You know, it's like one of the things that that happens with these corporations, and this is across all the industries, you know, is that they'll put a name on something. They'll call it clean energy, but under the name clean energy, they're meaning fracked gas and pipelines, releasing methane, you know, destroying the climate, polluting communities, but they'll call it clean energy, you know. And
right.
So, you know, some a politician will get on a podium and speak into a microphone and use those words, and then everyone, you know, wants to trust the person and feel reassured. Of course, Trump never does that. There's no question of trusting or believing him, you know, for the most part. But I think the fact that, you know, there are a lot of people saying, well, you know, and there are many ways in which Trump, you know, is just, as everyone's always said, worse. But in this particular department, all along in your reporting, you know, you've surfaced a lot of things that really showed the backhanded game that, unfortunately, you know, the so-called opposition has been playing all along. I did a piece on it, too, really delving into candidate Clinton's energy plan, you know, supposedly clean. And, you know, I think the other thing that really is striking to me is that, you know, we're talking about Eben Burnham Snyder, who worked for Senator Markey. He also at one time worked for the National Resources Defense Council. And, you
Correct.
Know, what that says to me, and you know, you also pointed out that Heather Zeichel, you know, has a role at the Nature Conservancy. Well, that's sort of, you know, if you didn't know anything about that group, well, that sounds like a good thing, conserving nature, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't actually drill into it, so there's also either greenwashing going on with environmental groups that have, you know, a kind of, not all, I don't want to tar every environmental group, but, you know, there are certain ones
mm-hmm.
that have a very mixed stance and reputation. And it also speaks to the fact that even if, for example, somebody like Eben Burnham Snyder went in, you know, as a defender of the environment, when like to put the best face on it, when he worked for the National Resources Defense Council, you know, they're subject
right.
to temptations and offers and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and getting recruited, you know, the minute that
no,
they're in place, you know?
Yeah, you raise really important points. And so I forgot, you know, I neglected to mention those environmental group ties. And, of course, as you mentioned, he was working for the NRDC. The NRDC is often criticized for kind of being too access-driven in terms of its advocacy and trying to kind of be close to, especially if there's a Democratic administration in power, such as the Obama administration or back in the 90s, the Bill Clinton administration, sort of gaining close ties and making, and they say they're making the quote unquote realistic policy pushes when, you know, kind of grassroots, more grassroots oriented groups and environmental justice groups feel like they're being thrown under the bus. So, it's somewhat natural that he went, you know, kind of the flow of NRDC to up to Congress, up to White House now in the corporate sector. I don't want to say it's like, divine driven that was the direction his career was going to take, but at some level, I think you did raise a really good point that it's not entirely shocking that it was like NRDC rather than another group that maybe doesn't have these same sorts of stances. And I think looking at Zeichel, very much the same thing. Yeah, her main job is actually not the board of directors, so that should definitely be highlighted. Although one thing that should be highlighted about that is just for serving on the board of directors, which is very much a part-time job for her at Cheniere, she makes $180,000 a year, according to their tax filings that they file with the Securities and Exchange Commission. So that's not her main role. Her main role is what you said, is she is now working at the Nature Conservancy, the NGO, as the head of corporate engagement, which some of the corporations that they engage with, as I pointed out in the piece, are oil companies and many others. So that's been kind of Nature Conservancy is sort of seen as the most greenwashed maybe of all of the big NGOs, them and Environmental Defense Fund. So
yeah.
And probably some others too. But yeah, so it's like, but it's just really important to point out, this is the woman who was the head liaison on climate and energy environmental issues within the Obama White House. So she was a very important official within the White House who then went through the revolving door into these new positions that I hadn't seen yet. And I pointed out in my article, one outlet had pointed out that she had formerly, quote unquote, served on the board of directors for Chenier. Well, I did confirm she's still on the board of Chenier. So while she's doing the Chenier thing, she is also the head of corporate engagement of a big, huge, like multi-million-dollar environmental NGO in Nature Conservancy.
Yeah, well, that really gives them even more of a black eye. And I believe I recall that she also had some role in the Clinton update of the Obama energy plan, you know, the Clinton clean energy plan, which was being touted all over the place. And yet when it came to getting some of the strongest environmental initiatives, like a commitment to climate change, into the Democratic platform in 2016, that was really blocked by Clinton's energy advisors. I'm not sure. I believe she may have been part of that group. So, you know.
She was like, yeah, she was at the very least, she was sort of what they call, so I don't know the exact term, but she would sometimes speak on environmental and energy issues on behalf of the Clinton campaign, but she was not directly working with the campaign. She wasn't on the staff. That was another guy named Trevor Hauser, but they're very they're in line with one another politically very much, and she sometimes would speak about the campaign kind of like as a quasi-official representative. So there's that.
Well, you know, you were basically coming into a time when you were going to be moving on to do other reporting on other future topics. So I just can't resist asking you, in the remaining time, you know, over the time that you've been reporting for DSmog Blog and earlier, covering these issues, looking at where we're going, looking at the corruption that has been the theme, you know, of this entire show and is the theme of many of your articles, when we see all of this corruption, do you think the American public really is fully aware of, you know, how much between a rock and a hard place we are in terms of making political choices on these critical, time-sensitive issues concerning climate, where we see both parties, and then so then going, this is worse, that is worse. It's like, where are the choices to, you know, get public officials that are not on the take and basically selling out our children's future to short-term energy profits?
Well, I think that a lot of, I mean, so I've been working on these issues, I guess, since like about 2010, and for DSpy, I've been working on these issues since 2011. And I've seen a lot more, I guess, you know, quite a bit of a different posture taken by people who are interested in these issues and concerned about these issues taken towards, for example, the Democratic Party. So when I first started, it was very much, this is still in the first term of Obama, and there was still some sort of, I guess, a little bit of hope by some factions of, oh, maybe he'll do more of the right thing, or maybe he'll, you know, very much, the Keystone XL was very much the focus back then.
Yes.
So fracking obviously has been an issue since then and even before during the Bush administration. But I think back then it was more like hopeful that he'll do the right thing and sort of getting more and more skeptical as developments started happening and more fracking was taking place, and then the LNG exports in 2012. And other, so I think that very much like the second half of Obama, I saw a huge shift, especially when it was seen as the Democratic Party establishment was sort of putting Hillary Clinton up there as their, the one who sort of had the right to become president next. Once that happened, there became a massive change in terms of how I saw people talking about the Democratic Party and a lot more skepticism of kind of channeling it through her first as like the kind of the prime example of a neoliberal Democratic Party, if you will, and then having that sort of looking at the alternative with Bernie Sanders and like a different vision of what, you know, kind of what a politician should stand for. I think that since then, it's, you know, obviously that started maybe in 2015, but that's really changed. Of course, there's a lot more, I would say, people aren't as shocked when they see these sorts of articles and maybe expect it more. There's a lot more, I would say, skepticism towards the Democratic Party establishment now than there was 5 years ago, for example, 4 or 5 years ago. So, yes, it's been, I think that things are definitely changing, and it will be interesting, very interesting to see how it goes out in all these races in 2018, especially with Democrats and how people who care about environmental issues, like, you know, what kind of questions that these various people running for office have, and what kind of policy stances they have to take. And I think that I just want to back up for a second. In 2017, we saw the gubernatorial race, the Ralph Northam race, where he won, became the governor of Virginia. There was an article that came out today that very much shows that even though he was, at least in name, kind of taking a somewhat critical stance towards the company Dominion, which owns an LNG export terminal in the state and pipelines and stuff like that, a major utility company too, he's sort of now cozied up with Dominion. So I think that that's another thing to keep in mind, is many Democrats will see it as opportunistic to take these laudable campaign stances, but I think the proof is always, of course, in the pudding of what they do once they're elected. Obama being the prime example, he, of course, campaigned on a platform of, we need to get move away from the tyranny of big oil, and we saw those are very much words compared to what he and his administration put into action. And now, as we started talking about, now many of those people work directly for that industry. So, you know, some I think that there's going to be a very mix between actual progressive politicians who are going to start doing things that are more in answer more to the constituents on these issues who care about them, but there's also going to be a lot of politicians who pay lip service to them in an opportunistic way and then defy what they said on the campaign trail once they're elected, which is obviously always the case in, you know, at least U.S. politics and probably globally as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, there's a kind of, you know, it's kind of business as usual. You know, in some people's minds, it's just kind of the way it is. But that wears thin, you know, when you on this issue, on the climate issue, because we have a ticking time bomb, you know, and it's going to affect everybody. And usually, I mean, you know, the Republicans really had to create this climate denial divide because, you know, otherwise, this would be an issue that if everybody agreed about it, everyone could get together on. And whereas the economic issue or various, you know, race issues and other issues, they're divisive. You know, some people agree and some people don't, and they're sympathetic to this one and they hate that one. And, you know, but this is something that if everyone agreed about it, it would really become the mandate for a major shift, because we're kind of dooming ourselves.
I think the most important thing about these issues, going back to when I started, is, of course, in a lot of ways, it's not really a partisan issue. A lot of ways, these are projects that are affecting people on the front lines who maybe when they, you know, got in their backyards, they weren't really a progressive activist, or they weren't environmentalists necessarily. They were just people living their day-to-day lives, and they get kind of become accidental activists. So we've seen a lot of that. And so I think that, yeah, in a way that I think that some of the projects will kind of come back to haunt the industry, and that they riled up a lot of people that they maybe thought would never be riled up. And so, yeah, I think it's just an ongoing public relations campaign by the oil and gas industry and by their collaborative politicians to try to, quote unquote, win the hearts and minds. But yeah, I think that there's huge amounts of skepticism towards people who are actually impacted or very close to being impacted by these projects, whether it's, you know, in the Marcellus Shale region, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, et cetera, whether it's down in Texas, a lot of areas where you wouldn't expect to see these sorts of movements and people concerned about these issues rising up. So, you know, untraditional alliances forming for sure.
Well, that is very true. I mean, the very fact that they're sprawled out all over the place like an octopus actually creates that. I mean, you know, if it was just, you know, affecting one, you know, designated dump spot. But, you know, it's all over the place, and it's affecting many, many, many different communities of all kinds. So, yeah, that's actually hopeful, and that's going to continue to happen. Well, it's been terrific having you here on Connect the Dots. Any final words? And, you know, we'll have to keep track of you in your next reporting gig. Any final words to our listeners?
No, you know, I'll still probably do a little bit of environmental stuff as a freelancer as time allows in the future. And, yeah, I look forward to coming back on the show to talk about reporting on criminal justice issues and prison system issues in the future, which are equally horrifying in a lot of ways. So I think that, I look forward to keeping in touch and really appreciate the opportunity to come on your show.
Well, thanks so much, Steve, and good luck in all your endeavors. We look forward to reading you as you cover and, you know, help us face some of these dire things and get a handle on them so we can do something about them. And thank you, listeners, for being with us on today's Connect the Dots. And thank you, listeners, for being with us today for this edition of Connect the Dots. We'll be back next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. We're here every week at that time. Heads up, stand tall, keep marching forward with all our relations. I'm Allison Rose Levy. Be well until our next edition of Connect the Dots.